Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Good day, everybody. Tom Block, Keith Jones with you. This is Front Row Knowles. KJ, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We survived the monsoon. I didn't know we were going to have those in April. And obviously, the weather has turned unbelievably nice of late. But more importantly, some really good things happening on the field. The diamond, as it were.
On the diamond, for sure. I think on the gridiron, too, although we'll judge that with our own eyes coming up this weekend. Keith and I recording early in the week. You mentioned the diamond. Do you want to start there? You want to save baseball for a little bit and get into football and talk spring, or knock out baseball real quick here and then get to football?
I mean, let's do baseball. Let's do baseball.
Okay. The floor is yours.
I read you echoed. There's probably some extenuating reasons, but I think the first thing to mention, and many of our listeners have probably seen it, but sweeping Florida and Miami in the same year hasn't been done since 1960. You weren't around and I was one. That's a long time ago.
It is. And I was shocked when I saw that number two. And regardless of how long it's been or whatever caveat I'm going to put on it here, it's still an impressive feat. The caveat is, and FSU baseball fans remember this, before the ACC days, Florida State and Miami used to play six games a year. They'd play three at Hauser and three in Coral Gables and back-to-back weekends. I mean, they'd play six straight times. And FSU and Florida used to play a Thursday and a Friday in one city, and then a Saturday and a Sunday in the next. They play four straight days. So point being, you played Florida and Miami 10 times over the course of the year. So it does make sense that there probably weren't many times that you went 10-0. Now, I don't know how many times they played them in 1960, but it matters not. I think the bigger story here, Keith, and we've talked about it a lot, given the success of the baseball team, is that, truthfully, Florida baseball was not relevant in this rivalry conversation until Kevin O'Sullivan got to Gainesville. Prior to that, it was clearly FSU and Miami were the big two out of the big three in the state of Florida. And then everything reversed itself, and Florida has had a lot of success under Sully, including a national title, and Florida State dropped off a little bit. So to see Link Jarrett in year two be able to just flip it like this, and it doesn't mean it's going to last, it's baseball, but this has been a fun year. And 19-4 last week at Hauser, I don't recall any of those really against Florida.
Well, and I had made the comment, and a couple of our listeners pleasantly and appropriately reminded me about, you know, the seven-inning run rule, one of the prior Florida games. I mean, so this was the second time that FSU had run ruled the Gators. My bad, and apologies. It's just continuing to be very, very interesting to me to see how things are maybe getting back to the way they should be, i.e., Florida State being able to win series against Florida. That hasn't happened in a long time. And the Miami-FSU series getting to the point where players are getting thrown out of the ballgame because the rivalry is truly back.
All right, so normally you play the curmudgeon here, right? And, well, by the way, just we'll get to the guys getting tossed here in a minute, and then we'll talk football on the show. We realize it's spring football week. The tough thing about this, Keith, is that FSU is not going to get credit for beating Miami because they're now 16-19 on the year and 6-12 in the ACC.
Right.
And Florida's 18-17 and 7-8 in the SEC. So you go into those thinking you're going to get credit for those, and they're not necessarily great wins, although they're against a rival, so they count as great wins. Here's the curmudgeon part. I heard Jeff Cameron talk about this a while ago, and maybe it's because our seats have moved, so I got a good view of the batter's box. But we damn sure like to admire our home runs, maybe a little too much, and I know that's the old man. You're proud. You're proud that I'm getting older, KJ. None of what they do after they touch home plate bothers me, but there's a little too much mean mugging and pimping, and I don't know that I've seen many bat flips, but certainly they let it be known that they're going to enjoy their trip around the bases.
That is obviously a generational thing, because you know, when I was playing ball in high school, granted it's high school, you're talking about college, but if I ever pulled a stunt like that, I'd be running gassers and sprints after the game because my head coach in baseball in high school would punish me. That was not something you did. And now you fast forward two generations and you've caught up a little bit, Mr. Block. It's almost become the norm. I don't like it. I'm still one of those guys. I mean, there's certain unwritten rules that, and baseball has more of them than any other sport, that you're just simply not supposed to do. However, it's nice to have that problem versus the other problem when, you know, you weren't in the top 10 in the country in hitting and you didn't have a player that was leading the country in RBIs and you didn't have three or four guys already in double figures with home runs.
Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. It does not allow for Miami to have its left fielder throw a baseball at the Florida State dugout when nobody's paying attention after catching the final out of the eighth inning. I'm not justifying that. Not surprising to see tempers flare at all. And I'm not even saying I don't really like it. I think for this team, it actually helps them play more confident baseball, and they need that to get where that's part of who they are.
Right.
Maybe it's just because it's not who FSU has been that it seems so different to me. But anyway, and Keith, I'm somebody, and I was trying to remember. I don't remember who I called the game with, but I was doing the TV broadcast when we were in Coral Gables and Miami got caught stealing signs in the middle of the game. And there was a 15-minute delay, and Mike Martin lost his mind. I mean, there's been a lot in this series over the years.
There's been times
was just another chapter.
There were times they wouldn't shake hands and they turned in the lineup. They obviously did not shake hands after the game on Saturday. Maybe things are just back to normal, Tommy. Maybe they're just back to normal.
Yeah, I don't know. It was certainly sweet, though, to win four in a row over your rivals in that week and sweep them for the season. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk some spring football, but that was still fresh on our minds. So now I'm a curmudgeon like Keith. We got that out of the way, and spring football talk is up next. Stay with us here on Front Row Noles.
Front Row Noles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Back on Front Row Noles, Tom Block, Keith Jones with you. It's time to open up that Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. And we say hello to our old friend Jerry Kutz from the Osceola. Jerry, how are you, sir?
Good, Tom. How are you, and Keith?
I'll only speak for me. I'm doing well, KJ.
I began the show with talking about how well I am. So I'm doing great, Jerry.
Good. Always good to hear.
Yeah, and it's good to catch up with you. Jerry, I'm not looking for who stood out at spring or any of that type stuff, but, I mean, you've been covering FSU football longer than anybody on this beat. When you go to practice on a Tuesday or a Thursday during spring, what strikes you as the most different from when you first started covering this and covering FSU football?
Well, from when I first started covering it, the players are bigger and there's more depth of talent. That I started covering in 82, you know, and there was a void of talent after Keith left. It took us a while to restock it, you know. But when I look at practice now, what I see is I see it at depth of talent at positions. There's a lot of defensive backs that can help us. There's a lot of wide receivers that can help us. The question now becomes which ones of those are going to rise to the, is the cream going to rise to the top? So I think that's the biggest difference. And Keith, I'll tell you, during the Bowden era late, you know, in the 90s and the Bowden era, you remember when you went out to practice, it was, you might as well be going to game day. I mean, the intensity of practice, the amount of effort expended by the players was on a different level. And I thought we lost that for a number of years, but I do believe I see that back the last 2 years in particular.
Another aspect of it too, Jerry, is our practices would be 3 and 3.5 hours long. So you couldn't afford, quote unquote, to be so intense with the restricted time now. when you set, but when you're between those white lines, you got to be doing things because you get a limited amount of time with those kids. And if you don't take advantage of it, it's gone.
I would agree with you, Keith. That's a very good point. I don't know how you guys could have gone with Jack Stanton for three and a half hours at the rate that they're going. I mean, I don't think it'd be impossible. I think it'd be impossible.
I agree.
So, and then the other thing, Keith, I think is they've got off-season conditioning programs, and well, you guys had them as well, but now the coaches can actually coach, you know, so when they go out there in the spring, there's no 3 or 4 days of getting a, you know, a, what's the right word?
Acclimated.
Yeah, there's none of that. I mean, when those guys go out there, for the most part, even the new guys already know what the drills are. I see a little paralysis by analysis. We'll talk about that with the newcomers, the transfers. I see a little of that, but maybe we'll get to that in a minute.
Well, let's dive right into that, Jerry. I mean, quarterback seems like maybe the first spot you would see that, and by reports, DJU is – look better the second half of spring than the first half, which you'd expect. But is that the position you meant or receivers or across the board for the new guys?
Yeah, I would say across the board, except for two guys. There must be, I don't know, 12, 15 new guys out there right now. And the only two I see, Jalen Early looks like he's been here from day one. And over on the defensive side of the ball, I feel like Earl Little, he's playing, wide open. There's no paralysis by analysis there. And I wonder about that because, you know, his background, his father being who he is, and the coaches he's had coming up, it just looks like he's been in the system for longer than he really has. So, but all the others, it's that, and even the coaches will say to them, you know, if you have to do it three-quarter speed, do it three-quarter speed, but do the drill right, you know? And so I think the guys, Keith, you might be able to speak to this. The guys are trying to learn a new defensive scheme or offensive scheme. They're trying to do it right. And once they get an 11-on-11, you got to play football. And I think as the spring has progressed, I've seen less paralysis. And an example I'll give you is Willie Jones Jr. I thought the first 3 or 4 days he was really feeling his way around, and I'm sure that the way he was coached at Georgia is a little different than the way they're coaching it here. And he's probably a kid that is trying to do it right. And but now you're seeing him make plays.
And Jerry, you've gone into the curmudgeon and older group because you said Willie Jones Senior as opposed to Marvin Jones Senior.
Count me in. Because
Willie played with me.
Count me in there with you. And by the way, Willie Jones Junior is coming back this Friday night. He's going to be at our event, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
I was just going to, add, Tommy, excuse me,
yeah.
Paralysis part. In spring, you do want them to do it slower so that they do it correctly, because you do not want them to learn bad habits that you have to then correct.
Right.
In fall camp, you better be going full speed even if you're making a mistake, because spring's when you learn, fall's when you do.
Yep.
I don't know though, Jerry. I mean, Mike Norvell doesn't seem to have that in mind when he's out there. He wants them going fast now. He's not grading on a curve because it's spring.
Oh, I would agree with you, Tom. And he's pushing everybody to go fast, fast, fast. But you know, position coaches sometimes will let's get it right. You know, so I like what I see. I don't think there's anybody out there that they've brought in. They do a very good job of evaluations, in my opinion. Everybody that I've seen that's transferred in here looks like they can help us.
Yeah, I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but Keith and I have talked a lot about the success rate in the portal, and then people get worried that they're not doing well enough in the high school ranks and it's not sustainable and all those conversations. Feels pretty sustainable. Every year they go out and they hit a pretty high average on these guys they bring in, so I'm not overly concerned about it. Offensively, Jerry, what do you want to see? I don't know if deficiency is the right word, but you've been out at practice a lot. What would make you feel better if you saw it happen on Saturday in the spring game?
I want to see a third down receiver. I want to see a guy when you got to get the first down, who's going to get open and make the catch. Last year, you know, we had two guys that on third down, if you threw the ball anywhere in their catch radius, you know, they didn't have to get open. They just catch the ball. And I think that we may lack that right now. We have a lot of good prospects at wide receiver, but I haven't seen that guy that, you know, he's my guy. But there's a lot of time between now and the fall for that guy to emerge. I just haven't seen it yet. I'd love to see it. The guy I think I like the best for that right now is Jalen Lucas, he and his brother, Douglas, they're your two most dependable receivers, I think, in short yardage situations.
Well, in today's world, and you see it in the NFL all the time, that third and short receiver is typically not your wideout. It is typically your slot. And both of them operate very well in the slot. So that might be something that emerges that you go, okay, this might even be a step above where we've been previously.
Yeah, I would agree, Keith. And, you know, I think when you see Jalen Lucas, I'm going to be curious to see your thoughts, Keith, but he's smallish like Darren Holloman. And as Bobby would say, he can run on all threes. He is very, very fast, very sudden. And his balance, when you do knock him off balance, he's got that hand down running on all threes. He's a tough out. So he's been the surprise to me. I didn't expect that from him when we signed him. But Lucas is the kid our fans, when you go to the game, it would surprise me if he doesn't make two plays that people are scratching their head how he made them.
You know, the two guys you're talking about there, the two brothers, like Keith said, they're slot guys or they're smaller guys. Of the bigger guys, the more typical outside guys, who do you think's got the best chance to emerge? And I know it's sort of been hit and miss. I haven't been out of practice a lot, but,
yeah,
you know, balls have been hitting the ground more than you'd like to see at times.
Exactly. That's my thoughts. And some of that is, you know, your quarterback's not greased up yet. And, you know, the more he's in the system, DJ, the less balls will hit the ground. But the guys, I think, you know, Hakeem Williams is somebody, you know, we're all writing about. But when Williamson and Poitier are healthy, they can help us. They've been plagued by injury during their career, and that's been true this spring as well.
Well, Poitier has shown what he's capable of doing when he's healthy. I mean, we have a short list of accomplishments there, but staying out of that injury tent can sometimes be a problem.
Yeah.
Jerry, I'm sorry to jump in. We got about a minute left in this segment. Jerry, do you have do you like the stable of running backs? Do you like what you see there?
Oh, yeah.
It's like a pitching staff, and everybody's got a different pitch, feels like. That's their out pitch.
Yeah. You know, there's some diversity in terms of their body types and in their running styles, but you've got some fast people and you've got some powerful people. I think the fans are going to like them. There's some real good players there.
Good. I look forward to that. We're talking with Jerry Kutz from the Osceola. And We got a big Friday evening on tap. It's a big Saturday with the spring game at 4 o'clock at Doak Campbell Stadium. And if you haven't been by the stadium, that's going to look a little different. We can talk about that in our next segment. But I really wanted, we wanted to have Jerry on to talk about the Seminole Showcase preview, which is coming up Friday at the Moon. And we will share more details right after this on Front Row Noles.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, we keep that Earl Bacon AC hotline open, and we continue our conversation with Jerry Kutz. All right, Jerry, we got the Seminole Showcase preview coming up Friday at the Moon, and this is a fundraiser and a pretty important one nowadays in the, you know, the three, it used to be the NCAA were the four letters we were always spewing. Now it's three letters. It's NIL is all we talk about with college football.
Yeah, it is. And it's become essential to the success of a program. So what happened, Tom, was last year, Andy Miller and I did a fundraising event for Billy Sexton. We had a golf tournament. We had a dinner at Glory Days Grill. And so it kind of scratched an itch for he and I, you know, an old fundraiser itch. So we thought, you know, let's do that again and pick another charity. And Battles End made sense. That's the NIL that works with our student athletes. So I got with Ingram Smith, who runs Battles End, and Scott Carswell, who runs the Moon. And we just, you know, put this event together. And it's shaping into something I think that fans are going to want to attend. Mike Norvell will be the featured speaker. Jeff Colhane will be our MC, and we're going to do a little panel of sports writers, one from the Osceola, one from War Chant, and one from 247, Noles 247, and, you know, just chop it up a little bit about what our observations are, having watched all of the spring practices, kind of a little bit like we're doing right now. So I think you'll get some good candid remarks from that panel. And then, of course, you get the payoff with Mike speaking.
Jerry, one of the things that jumps out at me about that is the Osceola and War Chant and Noles 247 are competitors.
We are.
So you guys fight for subscriptions and advertising dollars and that type of thing. But the importance of having something to write about, i.e. having the NIL, is bringing you guys together in
yes,
support of this.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we did this event, I say I, we, when we did this event, my inclination being the Osceola guy is to promote the Osceola. But if I did that, I would do it at the detriment of the beneficiary, Battle's End. So, you know, I talked with Gene Williams and with Chris Nee from the other sites and said, hey, let's come together and do this and, for the good of Battle's End. So this event is very white labeled. If I wasn't talking about it with you guys, you would have no idea Osceola had anything to do with it. And that's why I want to keep it. Ira wrote a nice story about it today, and Chris and Brendan Sinone, they're doing the same. So, you know, it's good for everybody. And if, like you said, Keith, we all benefit, the fans benefit, we benefit. And those who come to the event, you know, they'll get another perspective on NIL than maybe what they have in their mind. We'll balance that into the evening. And then the other thing is we will live stream this. We don't have the link yet, but it will be live streamed. So for those who are listening who can't come, be on the lookout. We'll communicate the live stream probably starting tomorrow when I get the link.
I'm looking
well, and you'll have you'll have a few former athletes there as well, correct?
Yes. The varsity club has their golf tournament earlier in the day. And some of those guys have bought tables and seats. So we're going to have a bunch of former players and coaches. Mickey and Jim Gladden and Sue Hall will be there, and I'm sure others. And so it should be a lot of fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And the other thing is I wanted to have a silent auction. So I put the word out that I needed silent auction items. And not only did the community respond with some pretty cool silent auction items, but, you know, in the way of dining and merchandise, but I got a lot of old memorabilia, but autographed footballs and helmets, and, you know, for the people who like collector's items, they're going to have a bunch to choose from.
Did anybody give you the spirit spear, Jerry? Because I feel like that could collect some dollars at a silent auction.
Oh, my goodness.
You'd have to move it to the live auction, actually.
I bet you Sam Solomon or somebody's got it out there. Yeah. That was something.
This is off topic, but I was chatting with FSU fans this week, and we decided that we need to reincarnate the spirit spear or some version of it once the stadium gets done. Why don't you tell us what I made the comment in our first segment that if you haven't been by the stadium, it looks a little different, to the point that you can be outside the stadium and see inside the stadium right now, which is a lot different.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, update us on the progress they're making.
Well, they're just now, you know, they're putting in the core for the foundations, you know, where the footers, basically, for the support columns that'll go up. Those things are being put in the ground right now. But, you know, it's shocking to me. You know, when you look at it, there's nothing there except dirt. And because everything right now is underground that they're doing. But the thing that shocked me, Keith, is how little distance there is from the sideline to where the building begins. It's not a very deep set of stands. When you get out there, you'll notice it.
Well, one of the things that Tom has always talked about in his 30 years of being on the sideline is how crowded it can get. Not at Doak Campbell, but you get to Clemson, you get to Florida Field, and some other venues, Tom, you chime in. The fans are right on top of it.
Yeah, the point Jerry's making, though, Doak has – the sideline when the stadium's configured is much wider than most stadiums. I think what you're saying, Jerry, though, is that from row one to row 85 or however many are in the stadium, that's not a very big width. And that's there. You can see it with the naked eye right now, since there's nothing in the way.
Yeah. It's really not as deep as I thought it would be, you know? And, you know, we had 85 rows because the distance between the rows was only 26 inches. And so when they go with this new 33 and 35 inch treads, they're probably only going to have about 64 rows, I'll bet you.
Keith, do that math on the fly real quick, would you?
I'm just telling you, you still don't want to get caught with something and have to be out there at 6 o'clock in the morning running stadiums. That's just all I'm going to say.
Yeah. It just means you got to run more flights of stairs if there's not as many of them, is what you're saying, KJ.
Exactly.
Jerry, overall, I always find spring games interesting. You know this, because if the offense looks great, well, then what was going on with the defense, or vice versa, right? So I think we're all in agreement that there's more better players on the team now than certainly last year or when Norvell got here. I mean, there's better depth. But what do you see, you know, as you look at this team right now, and it's hard in the spring, I mean, what do you think the ceiling is for this team? What's your sense?
I don't see anybody on their schedule they can't beat. You know, last year, I think you could look at our schedule last year and identify a couple of teams that could beat you. But as I look at the schedule right now, I mean, there's going to be five games that are going to be difficult, but there's not any of them that Florida State can't win. Traveling to Notre Dame in November can be dicey. Opening in Ireland can be dicey. I think Miami at Miami will be could be a very challenging game. Florida and Clemson can always bite you in the rear end. But I think this team could be good enough that they could win any and all of those games. I certainly wouldn't go into a season predicting 13-0, but this team definitely has it has the makings of a team that is going to be extremely competitive against anybody they play.
Jerry, there are some that suggest, and I may be jumping on this bandwagon as well, that we're maybe back to the mindset of the dynasty years in that what we said during that 14-year period is we're good enough to beat anybody. What we need to be concerned about is injuries and turnovers. And when's the last time those were the two things we talked about with the Florida State program?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as we talk about DJ and his progress, the thing that stands out to me, Keith, that we took for granted was Travis got to the point where he did not turn the ball over. I mean, two turnovers last year. And I think we only had, we had less than 10 counting fumbles.
Right.
And I went back and looked, and I, that's a record by a lot for Florida State.
One of those turnovers, Jerry, was in the first half of the first game of the year. Might have even been the first quarter against LSU when he threw one of his picks.
Yeah, and then I think the second one was like the last game, wasn't it?
And no, it was against Duke. It was the pick six against Duke. But that was like, but yeah, he didn't. It was. I think you're dead on there. That was one of the reasons why when we were playing this quarterback sweepstakes game or whatever. You know, the one thing that jumped out at me on the kid who went to Miami is how many times he put the ball on the ground because we haven't been doing that lately, and that'll be a change. I like DJ's size, and hopefully he protects the football too.
I think that's two observations I've made about him. One is those few times at practice where he really takes off and runs it with the intention of scoring, he's more elusive in the open – an open field than you would think a guy that really is built like a defensive end. He is pretty elusive. Not just is he powerful, but he's elusive. And that kind of surprised me. And then the second thing, he has a very quick release. You know, he flicks the ball. He doesn't really wind up and throw. And I was glad to hear Gladden was at a practice one day. He made that same observation that he can get the ball out of there quick. Now, what I want to see more of from him is more accuracy. Right now, like you said, Tom, too many balls are hitting the ground. I will say this too. He's getting pressure from Brock. Brock has had a good spring in my evaluation. So, you know, we have the luxury of having two guys, I think, who can win. And that's good to have.
Well, that's good. Jerry, we'll let you get running, but I'll remind folks you can go to moonevents.com to get tickets for the Friday night festivities in advance of Saturday's seminal showcase. The only thing I didn't like about your article, Jerry, and as I'm looking at it right now, is you pointed out that it's 131 long days between tax day and when we play football in Ireland, which seems like a lot of days.
It's a lot of days. Hey, before we go, we didn't talk about defense, Keith.
All right, fire away, Jerry, fire away.
No, I'm just saying that. Keith and I love the defense, so. But no, seriously, I like the defensive front. I like the secondary. I think the defensive ends in terms of depth. You know, you lose Verse, but Peyton's back, and he'll be a better player next year than he was this year if he continues to develop. Marvin has come in and turned some heads. And then they brought in a couple of transfers that I think are, and then Byron Turner, I think, will be a better player than he was last year. So to me, the only position of question is the linebacker. DJ Lundy is going to be, I think, better than last year. And there's a few prospects there that are young, couple guys I like. I like Nicholson and I like Cryer. I think people are sleeping on Cryer, and I think he's got a real good chance to be a player. And of course, they brought in the kid from Alabama, and he has a very high ceiling. And he's a kid who I think has been, paralysis by analysis. So I'm looking forward to him turning it up. But, when you got a good defense, as Keith knows, and you have a punter and a kicker, you can win a lot of games. And I think that's exactly what Florida State's got.
The biggest thing, Tommy, that jumps out at me and Jerry about this defense is really the coaching staff. First couple of years, Adam was hesitant to dial up pressure because he just didn't feel comfortable with the kids he had and that type of thing. I think Coach Shannon exudes, Coach Sertan exudes, Coach P, that they're willing to put schematically some things together that put pressures on offense because they now have the talent to execute it. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
See what it looks like Saturday at 4 o'clock at Doak Campbell Stadium, and we may see many of you Friday night at the Moon, 5 to 7:30 for the Seminole Showcase preview, benefiting the Battle's End. Jerry, we appreciate it, sir.
Man. Thank you for having me. I love being on this show with y'all.
No, appreciate what you do. All right, we'll take a break. Come back and wrap up Front Row Knowles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
To finish things up here, KJ, and we didn't talk. We talked about this in the break as we let Jerry go, but we never talk about the punter or the kicker. And remember, a year ago, we had a lot of talk about the kicker, and then lo and behold, he went out and had a heck of a year.
We did.
Special teams. You only talk about special teams when it's not any good, and then all of a sudden, it's why can't we get somebody to catch a punt? How come nobody make a field goal? And I think what it speaks to, and this is not what we talk about, but it's going to win some games for FSU this year. Is their special teams with a veteran kicker, veteran punter. Lucas is going to be really good in the return game. I mean, Span's coming back. There's a lot there. And then the other thing I mentioned to Jerry that we haven't talked about since the schedule came out, the three bye weeks is huge. You rarely have a season with two bye weeks. To have three, not just for health for a nagging injury, but also so you can go back and focus on fundamentals. You have time every three or four games with all these new guys who are coming in to say, hey, we got extra time. Let's spend this period and let's rerun this play because you guys aren't getting it right. And that's a luxury with their schedule.
Well, and don't neglect the mental part of it. I mean, if you play 8 games with 1 week off and then 4 more games, I mean, the mental part of the season, when you can give kids some time off, they can get out of the surroundings. If they have the opportunity, they can go back home and detach and rest mentally for a couple of 3 days. As intense as everything is, as we talked about when we began with Jerry, you only get 20 hours in the week, which means you got to jam everything in, which means everything is on the hop. There is not an opportunity to catch your breath unless and until you have a bye week. And yeah, I agree with you for both, mainly for physical reasons, but also for teaching and fundamentals and basics and the mental aspect of it. I think it's advantageous, very advantageous.
Jerry mentioned some interesting things there during the course of our interview, but if Earl Little and Marvin Jones Jr. are going to start living up to the hype that they had when they were coming out of high school, i.e. the number of stars, That defense can be pretty damn good again. But what are you looking most forward to seeing this weekend? Where are your question marks?
Well, my question mark is also at linebacker. I know that's become a whipping post and everything, but I think Coach Shannon has proven with his experience and his depth and background, you know, it's maybe those linebackers don't come in with the hype that someone else does, but by the time season rolls around, and certainly by the time the middle of the season rolls around, he's going to get everything out of that group that he can. But I just want to see the talent. We've heard, we've read, we'll see. You've got 6, 8, 9 defensive backs that you're not afraid to play. You've got 3, 4, maybe 5 defensive ends. You've got 4, maybe 5 tackles. I mean, there's the depth and the level of talent. You just got to find the right combinations. But I'd be interested in the linebacker crew. Simply because you got to have one segment you pick on, Tommy. So we're just going to continue that on the linebacker side.
All right, sounds good. All right, we are we're out of time. We will maybe see you at the Moon on Friday night. Maybe see you at the stadium on Saturday. Hopefully, you'll tune back in next week for another episode of Front Row Noles. And remember, it's portal season once again, Keith. So happy portal shopping to you and yours.
Yeah, I can't wait to make my list and check it twice.
He's nodding,
and see who's naughty and nice and all that other good stuff.
All right. We're out of time, folks. Thanks for tuning in. He's Keith. I'm Tom. This is Front Row Noles.